This is Miss Meeks, and I'm just going to do a walking, talking mock, going through both language papers for exam practice. Okay, so, question one. Read again the first paragraph of the source from lines 1 to 7. List 4 things about Amsai Station. So, what I'm going to do with my highlighter is I'm just going to do a box around lines 1 to 7, and I've highlighted that it's the station I'm looking for. This is before I've even read the extract, because I think it's easier to read through it when you know what you're looking for. So, I know what I'm reading first, and I want you to have a think about 4 things that you could say about the station. Amsai Station, grand and high-fronted like a great theatre, with the Kaban logo hanging over its entrance in letters of blue fire. Booming loudspeaker voices reciting litanies of stations, moths and monk bugs swarming under the lamps outside, beggars and street kids too, and buskers, and vendors selling fruit and chai and noodles, and rickshaw captains squabbling as they touted for fares. Through the din and chatter came the sound of the train. Okay, so we're looking for 4 things about the station, and as per usual, there are lots of things that you could select here. So I'm just going to pick out the first 4 things I see. It's grand, that's a mark. It's high-fronted, that's a mark. It resembles a theatre, that's a mark. It's got a logo hanging in blue fire, letters of blue fire, that's another mark. So there's lots more that you could say, but it's better to just move on and do that question as quickly as possible. So, question two. How does the writer use language here to describe the station and the train's arrival? You could include the writer's choice of words and phrases, language features and techniques, and sentence forms. I tend to ignore that last one because if ever there is anything interesting to say about a sentence form, you're going to want to use it for question 3, but it's in there nonetheless. So we go back to our extract now and we find the section that we want. If it's normally actually printed in front of you, but it's these questions go in order, so it will be further down along the extract. So we're carrying on now. Again, we're looking out for language to describe the station and the train's arrival. I've got my highlighter and I'm just going to highlight keywords as I go through, things that I know could be useful to talk about, so that then when it comes to me writing up this question, I can link the words and phrases that go together well. Zen went through the entrance barriers and ran out onto the platform. The express was just pulling in. First, the huge loco, a Heldon hammerhead, its long hull sheathed in shining red gold scales. Then a line of lit windows and a pair of station angels flickering along the carriage sides like stray rainbows. Some tourists standing next to Zen pointed them out and snapped pictures, which wouldn't come out. Zen kept his place in the scrum of other Kaban travellers, itching to look behind him, but knowing that he mustn't, because if the drone was there, it would be out. It would be watching for just that, a face turned back, a look of guilt. Okay, so here, just to remind you, you want to just double check. So even if there are the most superb language devices that are used to describe, you know, how he's feeling or something, that's not what you're looking for. It's the station and the train's arrival. So hopefully you should have gone through your paper whilst I was reading this and highlighted the keywords that you think are worthwhile and relevant. Some of the ones that I highlighted were hammerhead. It's referred to as a hammerhead, which instantly makes me think of a hammerhead shark. So I don't know if anyone else thought that. It's long, long hull, sheathed. Sheathed, I think of like some when you sheath a sword, but that might just be me. In shining red gold scales. So I've kind of highlighted all of that, but I'll probably pick them apart separately. Because what you've got here, the shining red and gold seems very majestic. We know it's been described as huge earlier. Perhaps red and gold are symbols of power. But then we've got scales, and I think it's quite interesting that we've got that aquatic imagery of the hammerhead shark that I thought of earlier, and then scales, like fish scales. Which maybe thinks that like this is a very powerful and it's almost natural by using this you know, fish-like imagery. I also highlighted angels flickering and like stray rainbows. So we've got more than enough there to be tackling. So what I want you to do is, if you are answering this question, is I want you to try and think of some of the techniques that you could use to show the description of the station. So you want to think of a point. So as I said, I think it's the train's arrival and the station seem quite magnificent, maybe quite threatening. Maybe quite magical, because we've got angels and shining and stray rainbows. Certainly beautiful. So there's a number of different points that you could make. And then what you would want to do is you would show how those descriptions, how you've come to those ideas by including your evidence, trying to use micro quotes, you know, rather than including the whole quote, it's long hull sheathed in shining red gold scales, actually by picking out how the red and gold colour imagery is majestic and powerful, and then the scales separately linking with the hammerhead could be this aquatic imagery, and then you might want to link the shining and the stray rainbows and the angels flickering to show the beauty. And then you want to give your overall overall impact that it's had on you about this language. You know, how, I know you're going to want to say it creates an image in the reader's mind, but please don't. Tell me, if you're going to do that, what that image is. We want specifics. So it makes the reader feel in awe, perhaps, of the station, or makes them feel threatened. Whatever that is, it doesn't really matter, as long as it links in with the evidence that you've used. You're not wrong in any of your interpretations. I've not actually read the rest of the extract yet, so it might turn out that this train is magnificent and my shark interpretations are nonsense. But it's the idea that there are those hidden implications of certain words, and if you can try and come up with ones that that are individual, you're going to really get those high-end marks. So good luck with that question. Now, for question three, consider the whole text. How has the writer structured the text to interest you as a reader? You could write about what the writer focuses your attention on at the beginning, how and why the writer changes focus as the source develops, and any other structural features that interest you. Now, in this pack that you've been given, it says, what do you need to remember to do in question three? And I'm going to give you those clues right now. You need to pick out how the focus at different points. It tells you to do it at the beginning, but why not do it at the beginning, middle, and end? So I would just write at the top, beginning, middle, and end. And you want to have specific things that you can talk about. In your mock that you did for your TAPS, some of you talked about how it was Alex's nightmare at the start, and how later the use of the blackbird might foreshadow the death of the mother when we find out that then she's ill. That's a very good technique to always mention. You can always kind of blag foreshadowing and a hint and a clue. and make some sort of prediction about what's going to happen, because it shows that you're doing really in-depth reading if you can start to think of the wider context of the story. You know, these are extracts from stories. This is one page in perhaps 500 pages. So yeah, mention foreshadowing if you can find it. Have a look out for juxtaposition. These are things I'm going to be looking at when I read the whole text in a minute. Juxtaposition, if you can't remember, is the contrasting ideas near each other. Repetition, perhaps a motif, so a recurring idea or theme if you see it throughout. So maybe if we've spotted the hammerhead shark and the scales, maybe when we read on there's something later that also has this fishy imagery. I've no idea if there is, so I could be made a fool of in a second. But mainly don't talk about things that aren't interesting. Don't say the writer's use of complex sentences is interesting because you get a lot of description. It just really doesn't mean anything. If you are at a loss and you find a complex sentence that you find interesting, then give us specifics. So information about what, you know, is it medical jargon that is meant to confuse the reader? It's got to be specific things to do with the reader and that relationship between the writer and the reader, because that's what you're being examined on. Okay, let's read the source. So bear those things in mind. Follow as I read through with your highlighters, and listen. So, Ambersye Station, grand and high-fronted like a great theatre, with the Caban logo hanging over its entrance in letters of blue fire, booming loudspeaker voices reciting litanies of stations, moths and monk bugs swarming under the lamps outside, beggars and street kids too, and buskers and vendors selling fruit and chai and noodles, and rickshaw cabins squabbling as they tooted for fares. Through the din and chatter came the sound of the train. So think about what's the focus of the beginning, because you're going to need to write about that. Instantly I noticed there we had that list, structural feature, alert, and we had lots of and, which you don't normally have. But it creates a sense of sort of out of breath, like in awe. I don't know. We'll see. I'll carry on reading. So the second paragraph. Then went through the entrance barriers and ran out onto the platform. So that's our first meeting of the character, interestingly enough. The express was pulling in. First, the huge loco, a Heldon hammerhead in its long hull sheathed in shining red gold scales. Ooh, little bit of sheath shining scales there. Then a line of lit windows and a pair of station angels flickering along the carriage sides like stray rainbows. Very beautiful. Some tourists standing next to Zen pointed them out and snapped pictures that wouldn't come. Zen kept his place in the scrum of other Caban travellers, itching to look behind him, but knowing that he mustn't, because if the drone was there, it would be watching for just that, a face turned back, a look of guilt. Ooh, intrigue. Interesting end to the paragraph there, a look of guilt, a bit of a change in tone following that use of the complex sentence, that added clause. The doors slid open. He shoved past disembarking passengers into a carriage. It smelled of something sweet, as if the train had come from some world where it was springtime. Zen found a window seat and sat there looking at his feet, at the ceramic floor, at the patterns on the worn seat coverings, anywhere but out the window, which is where he most wanted to look. His fellow passengers were commuters and a few motoric couriers and their android brains stuffed full of information for businesses further down the line. In the seat opposite Zen lounged a couple of rich kids, railheads from Kumbusi or Galacast, pretty as 3D stars, dozing with their arms around each other. Zen thought about taking their bags with him when he got off, but his luck was glitchy tonight and he decided not to risk it. So we've got an element of guilt that's kind of come through twice. At the end of the second paragraph, it tells you a look of guilt. And then he talks about stealing their bags and decides not to risk it. So that's a little something to watch out for. Right, I'm going to read the third paragraph now on the next page. The train began to move so smoothly that he barely noticed. Then the lights of Amsai Station were falling behind. The throb of the engines was rising, the back seat of the wheels quickening. Zen risked a glance at the window. At first, it was hard to make out anything in the confusion of carriage reflections and the city lights sliding by outside. Then he saw the drone again. It was keeping pace with the train, shards of light sliding from its front rotor blades as it blurred along at window height, aiming a whole spider cluster of eyes and cameras, and who knew what at him. The train rushed into the tunnel, and he could see nothing anymore except his own skinny reflection, wide cheekbones fluttering with the movements of the carriages, eyes big and empty as the eyes on moth wings. You mentioned moths earlier. Next one. The train accelerated, the noise rising, until with a soundless bang, a kind of unbang, it tore through the K-gate and everything got reassuredly weird. For a timeless moment, Zen was outside of the universe. There was a sense of falling, although there was no longer anything down to fall to. Something that was not quite light blazed in through the blank windows. Then another unbang and the train was sliding out of another ordinary tunnel, slowly towards another everyday station. It was bright daytime on this world, and gravity was lower. Zen relaxed into his seat, grinning. He was imagining the drone turning away into feet from the empty tunnel on Ambershire, 1,000 light years away. Okay, so we've definitely got this magical element, this magnificence that kind of builds throughout. And if we go back to our little blurb that we got at the top, it's extract from a 2015 novel about intelligent trains that travel between the stars. Here Zen, a young petty thief, is trying to escape from a drone that's following him and enters Ambershire Station where the trains depart for other planets. So what I want you to do is I want you to think about how we get this magical element throughout. Think about what happens in each paragraph when you're doing your answer and why it's been structured like that. Where is the anticipation built? Where's the sense of foreboding? Where's the kind of clues for what's going to happen? Because that's what you're going to need when you talk about the structure of this question. Okay, good luck. I want you to spend 20 minutes writing up questions 1, 2, and 3. And then you will have about 20 minutes to do question 4, and I'll do the podcast on that later. So set your timers, make sure that you're really strict on yourself. Remember, you've had the equivalent sort of 10-15 minutes reading and thinking time, so you wouldn't want to go up over that with your write-up, and the discussion of ideas should have helped you. Good luck.